Hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, October 24th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. The oh-so-funny and deliciously smutty author, Hank Edwards, is back with us for part two of his appearance on this, the Erotic Mind series. As you know, these podcasts are interviews with erotic artists, both literary and visual, and our conversations are attempting to uncover something of the creative process involved in this unique art form. To tell you the truth, there's nothing more exciting than discovering what makes an erotic artist tick, so to speak. Hank graciously shares another selection from the fruit of his erotic mind. This week he reads from Book 1 of the Venom Valley series, Bounty. Here's a tip. Think vampires and zombies in the Old West. I know. Can you stand it? But wait, you didn't miss part 1 of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you gotta do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 304, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. For more of Hank, be sure to visit his site, hankedwardsbooks.com. You'll find his story orgy contributions on his blog, hankedwardsbooks.com/blog, and you can find him on Facebook and Twitter too. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating implements, toys, fetish wear, and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You will definitely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes, sirree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You will be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Hank, and thank you again for joining us for this part two of our discussion for the Erotic Mind podcast series.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Yes. I had such a good time with you last week. You're a joy to talk to. And funny, as I'll get out, I like that. Sometimes these conversations are difficult to have because people answer yes and no to my questions. And and then could you expand on that, please?
On that? Yeah, no, exactly. How about some details?
I'm dying over here. So you mentioned something last week, just as you were concluding. And you called attention to your blog. So let's talk about that. Tell us about your blog and why you have such a thing to begin with.
Okay. Well, the blog started when I had my website redone, and my webmaster, which sounds so kinky.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it?
But it's really not. He said, I'm going to create a blog for you. I was like, ugh. You know, great, something else to write. And I was like, I don't know what I was going to write. So I started doing just little posts, and then I met some friends online, M. Woods, who I first chatted with her online, and I'd posted a question about vampires because I was going to write a vampire novel. And she answered, and we got to chatting, and then she invited me to join this group called Story Orgy. And the idea is there's five of us, five writers, and we post every Monday morning a new free, because it's on our blog, like male-male romance story. And we try to, we've really come a long way. We've only been doing this since the end of January of this year. Uh-huh. And we have an anthology out called And the Prompt Is. And the first 3 months of proceeds or profits from that anthology, those sales, went to a charity. So we donated to that charity those first 3 months. And so the book's been selling really well. And it's a short story from each of us that was taken from blog postings. So we've got like two or three more planned in the future coming up.
So each of you have his or her own blog, and you each write serialized stories on your own blog, and then for this compilation, you took your stories, made a book, and donated the proceeds to the Trevor Project charity. That's fabulous.
Oh yeah, it's really great, and we all link to each other on our blog.
Oh, how great!
Yeah, so we're like, okay, if you liked my chapter, you're gonna love these, and say, you know, click on over to read somebody else's work. So it's really cool.
It's a once a week update. That's an amazing kind of thing.
Oh my God, I know.
Original content every week.
Oh yeah.
Week out.
I know. You're making me tired.
I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
I know. Oh.
And also last week you mentioned at the very end that we can buy all of your books and here and there and blah, blah. And you mentioned that you've self-published. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I came up with a series. I don't know where I get these ideas, but it was actually a year ago, and I was thinking about, you know, the vampire myth, and the vampires are really big now, and all
yes.
kind of stuff, and I was like, oh yeah, they're just like huge, and I was wondering about, you know, vampires and zombies, and because I think The Walking Dead was supposed to be starting soon or something, and I was like all into that, and I thought, wow, they've never really been together in a book, and what if zombies could, like, had a power where, like, their teeth could, like, penetrate the vampire's skin.
Kind of
vampire stuff. So I was coming to, that was, like, the kicking off point. And then I set it in the Old West.
Of course you did.
Because there wasn't enough of them.
There's just not enough of that.
Yes, you know. And so it's like, oh, I know. Old West. I love historical and doing all that research.
I know. And you do a lot of that stuff, which I think is absolutely fascinating. That we're going to get to in a minute.
Yeah,
you published... I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead. You were going to tell us more about that, and the book then is self-published, The Vampire?
Yes, it is. It's called Bounty, and that's book one, and it's the series, overall series name is Venom Valley.
How cool.
Yeah, so, and I decided to self-publish because I heard from one of the publishers, I kind of investigated different publishers, mm-hmm. and... they all want, like, a set ending, like a happily ever after or a happy
forever. Is that right?
Yes. So they're all very key on that. And you know what? The way I had my first book ending, and I'm sorry, everybody, but it's got a cliffhanger.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I'm working on book two right now. So I got answers. But, so they were all like, you know, maybe if you change it. I'm like, I don't want to change it. So I decided to self-publish it.
Wow. Yeah. Is that challenging, the self-publishing?
You know what? The challenging part is the marketing.
Yeah.
The self-publishing is easy. It's just, you know, you upload one file and, like, all of us, like a Smashwords, oh my God, I uploaded one file and I got, like, 15 out of it.
Uh-huh.
I was like, good Lord, it's like rabbits. But, and then I just uploaded to different places. All romance ebooks, Smashwords, and Amazon was really easy as well.
Yeah.
Amazon was really, really easy. So it's available there as well.
Yeah. So marketing, as you suggest, is really is difficult. That's almost as difficult, if not more so, than writing and editing, which we talked about last week.
It is, you know, because the writing and editing is what I know.
Yeah.
And then the marketing is like the business side of it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, so who do you contact? How do you get the word out? And, you know, I can do enough with Facebook. You know, you've got like 550 friends, and I've joined a lot of different groups out there that are focused on these kinds of things. But it's like just kind of getting the word out and letting people know it's there. So I'm hoping word of mouth, so to speak.
Right.
Well.
Well, maybe by the fact that we're talking about this will spur some interest, don't you know?
Ooh, that would be nice.
I don't suppose you'd be interested in reading for us again, because I'm like dying since last week.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, good. Do. I'm ready.
And actually, I have something here from Bounty.
Get out!
I won't.
Excellent. Well, launch whenever you're ready.
Okay. There was a body inside the house. Josh could feel it. He stood on the porch as the chill wind blew sand around his boots and against the wood planks of the house. The warm feeling inside him, long absent and only just recently returning, had started again. It sat low in his belly, just above his groin, a ball of heat like a stone pulled from the ashes of a smoking fire. It wasn't too bad, not yet, but Josh knew what the sensation meant. He had only felt it twice before, and both times he had been near a dead body that suddenly started to move. Behind him, Clementine tossed her head and snorted where she stood tied to the porch railing. "Easy, girl," Josh whispered. He licked his dry lips and reached for the door latch. The warmth spread, became a hot, prickling sensation that filled his chest and spread down his arms, bringing his hand to a stop. He swallowed the little spit left in his mouth and stared at the door latch. If Agnes were behind the door, he didn't think he could do what had to be done. Not to her. She was the only mother he had known. He should just turn, step off the porch, climb into the saddle and ride off into the September dusk. But what if it wasn't Agnes dead inside the house? What if it was someone else? Maybe an Indian attacker Agnes had shot, and then she had gone for help. Or maybe it was an older lady caller who had had a bad heart. Josh had to know for sure. He moved away from the door, crossing the porch in three long strides to lean his rifle against the house. Cupping his hands around his eyes, Josh peered through the dust-streaked window. A single oil lamp was lit, the flame fluttering in the drafty sitting room. Josh squinted and looked all around the room but saw no sign of a body, yet the heat remained inside him, building, growing hotter still. It was as if his blood was being boiled over a fire and poured back inside. Clementine snorted again, impatiently it seemed to Josh, and he shot the mare a dirty look. "Clem, hush now. I'll take the saddle off soon." Josh picked up his rifle and moved back to the door. He adjusted his grip on the wooden stock, checked to make sure the safety was off, then thumbed the door latch and pushed inside. Shadows filled the long sitting room, shifting and swaying in the flicker of the lamp. Embers glowed inside the stone fireplace, a sure sign something was amiss. Agnes never let the fire burn down that low during the day. The small dining room was darker still, place settings on the table. "Agnes?" Josh called and winced at the tremor in his voice. He could feel oily beads of sweat on his forehead and swiped his coat sleeve across the surface. Just like a few days ago, he thought, out at the Overbrook farm. Josh shook the thought from his head and headed toward the dining room, intending to check the small bedroom where Agnes slept. "Agnes, are you here?" Blue material on the floor across the sitting room caught the corner of his eye and he stopped fast. A cold spot seemed to bloom inside his chest, a nugget of ice within the waves of heat rolling through him, and he reached up to remove his hat. "Agnes?" No response. Agnes laid face down, right hand extended above her head. Her silver hair had come loose from the customary bun and covered her face. "No, Agnes," Josh said, his voice quiet, almost lost in the sound of the wind. As the sun edged lower in the sky, Josh moved to kneel beside her, careful not to get too close. There was no sign of violence that he could see. She must have just fallen where she stood. Her heart, maybe, or that cough she'd had for a while now, which had seemed to be getting deeper of late. Whatever it had been, she was gone, and Josh bowed his head. He said a quiet prayer, wishing peace to headstrong, loving Agnes, who had opened her house and her heart to him so many years ago. Streams of sweat mixed with his tears as the heat built inside him and regret churned within him over his actions the last few days. He had been on edge, angry and defensive with Agnes. Surely if he had just sat down to talk with her about Wayland Overbrook, explained his side of things, she might have been able to provide some idea why it was happening at all. But Josh hadn't been thinking very clearly the last few days. He had stayed away from the house most of each day and not said more than two words to Agnes when he was home. It had been out of character, he knew that, but the confusion and rising guilt had gnawed at him, and he had not yet found the words to explain himself to Agnes, because he had never shot a man before. Josh stood and stumbled backwards across the room. He was lightheaded, drenched in sweat, the strange heat growing, prickling just beneath his skin. The backs of his legs struck the rocking chair, Agnes's rocking chair, and he sat down hard, the rifle clapping against the armrest and making him jump. He caught his breath as darkness slowly took the room. While the shadows lengthened, Josh sat stiff and alert in the rocker, resigned to keeping watch. He wanted, no, needed, to see if the warm feeling inside him was a common sign, and if it was, he thought he knew how to make sure Agnes stayed dead.
Dope.
Dun dun dun.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Besides, it's so well done. I mean, it's well done. It's very captivating. I love it. Absolutely great. So, As you know, the primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. So I have to ask, are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, what sparks the images that become your erotica? Don't disappoint me with this.
Oh, sexual athlete. I wouldn't call myself a sexual athlete. I'd say I was healthily active.
Uh-huh.
Blushing now, thanks. But, we have a really good and trusting relationship. So we're monogamous and we get to have a lot of fun. And I like exploring things with my partner. And, we're both kind of, we rent movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so we keep up on things. You know, we'll see a new hot porn star we both will like because we each have the same kind of taste. So, sometimes he'll go out shopping and he'll come home. Hey, look, I brought home some porn.
What? Look.
Look, wow, that and Brussels sprouts.
We're going to have a real feast.
What are the Brussels sprouts for?
I could tell you a story about that, but I'll save that for later.
Oh, my, okay. I'll get ready to write it down.
You were mentioning the notion of romance as a genre, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. And then there's the genre of erotica. How do you distinguish the two, if at all?
Romance is... And I was thinking about this earlier, because I knew you were going to ask me this.
It's romance a quiz, me, don't you know?
It is. It's a pop quiz. Oh, no. Romance to me is the feeling, right? It's that... The sensation, the emotion... between the people, whether it be men or a man and woman or two women. And that's what romance focuses on. And then the erotic romance has that, but it goes beyond the closed bedroom door, right? It takes it to that detail where you get to see the intercourse and you get to see that, the characters actually coming together, so to speak, and participating, I guess, and solidifying their relationship mm-hmm. with sex. So
where would porn fit in the spectrum, if anywhere?
While porn is beyond the romantic, to me, beyond the romantic erotica, and that is just, that's the sex.
I see.
And I've been accused of just writing pornography. So, and then my book, Fluffers, Inc., I also have an excerpt from that ready if you're interested. But it's because Charlie's a fluffer, he spends a lot of his time on the set of gay porn.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, oh my God, this was just sex, sex, sex. And my vision for Charlie has always been, in each chapter, I want something sexual to happen and something funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was more like, it's not to be read. I mean, I'd love it if people could sit down and read the whole thing at once. But it was like read as short stories, right?
They're
all linked, these, because it's Charlie's Adventures. And there's an overwhelming, story arc there.
Freudian slip, huh?
I was like, oh, it overwhelmed me.
I verklempt, oi. I love it. So people actually have suggested that your erotica sometimes crosses the line and into the realm of pornography. That's an interesting kind of thing. You don't consider yourself a writer of pornography, or do you?
I think at first I really was, because you're writing these short stories to go in Stroke magazines, right?
Yeah. Well, and you have to have X amount of things happen in an X amount of space.
Exactly. You have limit of 5,000 words.
Uh-huh.
And we want to see this, this, and this, so go. Yeah. But each of my stories I tried to make a little different, and uh-huh. I tried to, have the character, get inside one of the characters' heads at least, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge to me, but I think even the short stories, even the pornography that I wrote in those short stories, which I'm actually thinking about self-publishing some of those old stories into a collection.
Yay.
Yeah, coming up soon. A Very Dirty Dozen. So,
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just rolling off of you. It's just...
Oh, my.
So to speak, as it were.
Yes. Oh, as it were.
Do you know if you have a sizable female following?
I do.
About chicks and gay shit? I really love it.
It surprised me. One of my first fans, she lives down in Florida, and she, when I first went on Facebook, she friended me within weeks, and she was all like, oh my god, I love Charlie. It's like, what? And she got her mother reading Charlie, and then her mother friended me, and so it's crazy.
I know when I was shooting porn for Daddy-O Productions, my video production company, I was surprised to learn that I had a sizable female audience, that they really loved my stuff, even lesbians, which was even harder to believe. But you know, it was really cool. And our stuff tended to be a little bit more romantic, alluring, and seductive rather than just bumping parts. But you know, so I was gratified. I thought that was so cool.
Well, that says a lot then about, you know, the quality at work, because I think women, you know, really are gravitate towards that. I'm going to get a lot of hate mail now for that.
And I'm going to write some of it myself.
Thank you. But no, they like the story. The character, right? Yeah. They're looking for better than just, you know, getting off.
Yeah. So. But they do like attractive men, you know.
Who doesn't?
With boners.
Oh, yeah.
I don't, of course, but other people do.
No. I look away.
So I was going to ask you, are there any benefits in your life to the work that you do? I mean, besides the gratification of producing something and actually getting paid for something and seeing your stuff published, which is wonderful and lovely for anyone who has been published, has your life been enriched? Your sex life, perhaps, even?
Oh, yeah.
Is that
right? So. Yeah, I definitely.
Huh.
We're not crazy adventurous. Like, we don't go out to the clubs and do things like that, you know. Uh-huh. But we like to, you know, my partner reads something I write, and it gets him excited. So
then that's a good sign.
I could track it, right? So I'm like, okay, let me help.
Uh-huh. So would you say then that, or would you recommend writing erotica for anyone, you know, to get in touch with their erotic side, or to help them through perhaps a sexual situation that they themselves are involved in?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I think as you write it, it becomes more comfortable to you, and you become more comfortable with it and the idea of it.
It's true.
Yeah.
And because I've used that in therapy for clients, you know, with people who are really uptight about, you know, they can't say the word, you know, of those parts down there. In fact, that's what they say is down there. And so I said, okay, now I want you to go home and I want you to write a story. And I want you to use all the words that you can't say out loud, but you can write them down on a piece of paper or, you know, in a computer file and stuff like that. And it's successful because, you know, first of all, it's an assignment, so, and doctors telling them to do it, so then they have the permission to do it.
That's right.
But it's also liberating. It's like, oh my goodness, I found myself that I'm capable of writing, you know, cock and cunt and pussy and whatnot, you know, on a piece of paper or, you know, on my computer, and the sky didn't fall.
Right.
And now I maybe have a vocabulary that I'm able to talk to other, you know, a partner with, and it's great.
Oh, I know, exactly. And I mean, you know, our country was founded by Puritans, so there's a lot of guilt here.
Yes. It's so true.
And it's very freeing, so it's interesting.
I also suggest, you know, that people read erotica aloud, you know, to get them in the mood for sex. Because it's really hard, you know, to come off of a hard day at work or dealing with kids or whatever it is that you do during the day, and, you know, to find yourself in bed with your partner and having and expected that you're going to perform. Well, who's going to turn on the switch? And right. Erotica does that really well, I think.
No, that's true.
So, as an author, do you write other stuff that is not commonly thought to be erotic?
Oh, I do. I've got several stories, like mysteries and some science fiction, kind of like speculative fiction things.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
That I've worked on. And I just need, if I had a whole day to be able to write, I could write, you know, this stuff, and I could turn over and write some other stuff.
But, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So do you see that there's a connection between, let's say, the human psyche, between sexuality and suspense? I've always thought that, I mean, like when I was a really little kid and I was watching things like Shock Theater in Chicago, I grew up in Chicago, and Shock Theater would come on like at 10 o'clock at night, and they would play the really, really old classic horror movies, the Frankenstein and Wolfman and Mummy and all those kinds of things. And there was always this thing between the horror or the suspense and sexuality. There, you know, the young maiden was, you know, going down the stairs in her nightgown and, you know, with a candlestick, and there was a draft, and the
right.
candles were flickering and stuff like that. And then when she meets the monster, whoever the monster might be, it almost was synonymous or a metaphor for losing, you know, sexual innocence.
Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
Do you see that connection as well?
Oh, yeah. And it was always, you know, the creature from the Black Lagoon falls
yes.
in love with the woman,
right,
and
right,
it's
right,
always
right.
that, you know, that, like, romantic kind of, like, you know,
yeah.
very sensual
yeah.
look, and, you know, King Kong and all of those things.
Phantom
yeah,
of the Opera, all that.
Yeah,
of.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't
Most
that
definitely.
Interesting? Interesting. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was a way of communicating sexuality, or at least sensuality or love, you know, back in the days when we couldn't really show that.
Right, right, when they had to have two single beds and
right.
one person had to keep their foot in the floor.
It's true. It's true.
Because I've still got my foot on the floor sometimes and had a pretty good time, so I don't know what that would have done.
I love it. So today, erotic artists abound, and there is an abundance of amazingly good written erotica. Although in some circles, this genre is still not accepted as mainstream. Has that been your experience, too? I mean, has somebody said, you're such a good writer, but what is it with all these penises and
yeah.
stuff?
Oh, definitely.
Have they
oh,
really?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I mean, people kind of like, it's more accepted, but...
Yeah.
I get some friends who say, you know, are you still writing? Are you writing other stuff? And, you know,
are you
writing?
Are you over
like,
that yet?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Have you grown out of that yet?
Uh huh.
I'm like, well, since it's sexual, I don't hope I never grow out of that ever, because I like it.
Hmm.
So yeah, I get that.
Hmm. And what is your response? Like, go fuck yourself and have a nice day. Or?
It depends who it is. If you ask me.
you don't say that,
but
to your
I'm
mother,
like, you know,
I'm
I say, but I'm like, you know what? I've met some really great people, and the ideas are all still there. And once
yeah.
the ideas go away, then you know, I'll probably have to make time for other stuff. But
right.
but I'm really enjoying it, and I'm.
It sounds like
I think
it.
We're can yeah, and I think we can tell good stories and still include the sex.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why that's so bad.
Is it possible for you? To eroticize something that you personally don't find particularly sexy?
I could probably do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could. Because that you're just trying to get into another mindset.
Right.
And if I thought about it enough, I could probably say, okay, now what would this person, what would this character, why would this
yeah.
character like this particularly?
Right.
So,
and
yeah.
I suspect that you've written scenes... You know, sexual scenes and stuff like that that don't necessarily reflect your own personal life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, fisting, I'm not... Ooh. That's, I'm adventurous, but wow, there's a... And I can't. No. No. And so it's... I mean, I've seen that in movies, and
yeah.
then I wrote about it
yeah.
in Vancouver Nights.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I had to... You know, step out and see
right.
it from that
right.
point of view. So,
right.
yeah.
Right, right, right. And one can understand the eroticism of a particular behavior without being it your eroticism, it seems to
right.
me.
Right. Sure, exactly.
Right. So what do you look for in the work of erotic art or written erotica of others?
You know, I like things that will surprise me. And now, of course, I look for humor. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I love including the humor in my work. And I look for those characters that I want to side with that will frustrate me, but also, you know, make me want to cheer for them.
Right.
Right, when things go well and be excited for them. So, yeah. I mean, Josh Lanyon is one that comes to mind. Oh, my God, I don't know how he does it. So he's an excellent writer, and his mysteries, and he always includes a little humor and some, you know, some danger in his mysteries and things like that. And his characters are wonderful. So,
cool. Who inspires you, and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Wow, my sexual heroes. You know, I have to admit that all gay porn stars around the world, they are my sexual heroes, because it takes a lot.
Oh, I'll say.
I know it's they have a they're exhibitionists, mm-hmm. right? So they like that. They like to be seen like that. But that's
it's work.
It's work. That
it is
work.
Such hard work. When we were shooting porn, it was just like, holy cow, how do you do it?
I know.
And you're asking them, you know, to be sex on demand, basically,
yep.
and
yep.
to be ready whenever the cameras are ready. It's
right.
It's all right. And then to have sex with somebody that
you might not be attracted to.
Exactly that.
Yeah. You know, and maybe they have really bad breath. Or,
exactly.
You know, I mean, it's just, yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah. So that's,
like
that takes a lot.
Right.
To me, that takes a lot.
And what about, as a parting gift to us all, your advice for the novice writer of erotica?
Oh, you know, go online, join a group. There's actually at Goodreads. Goodreads.com has a male-male romance group. And there's 4,300 members in that group.
Wow.
And yeah, and this is a great group to get in touch with, and you can share. There's like lots of books listed on the bookshelves, and find these books and get in touch with these people. Chat, join the chats. And, you know, as you're writing, the best thing you can get from people is feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So join a writing group or find like-minded people online and do a round robin where everybody sends everybody else a piece of work and just do some edits.
Right. And so, possibly, if you're writing erotica, you know, your fine arts writing class at the community college is not the place to look for
yeah.
feedback.
You might, well, I don't know, you might find somebody like back in the back corner, you know, sitting there, kind of hunched over, notebook, scribbling.
the guy in the trench coat.
Yeah, just, I mean, those classes are awesome, just for the feedback,
that's
even,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's it for today, again, and I could go on and on. You're just such a charming guy to chat with, and so easy to chat with. I'm so delighted to have spent so much of my time with you, and I know our audience is also grateful. But before we go, would you give us your website address again and walk us around? Where can we buy your work, that sort of thing?
Of course, thank you. It's www.hankedwardsbooks.com. And my books are available online at Amazon.com and at All Romance eBooks, and a majority of them at Smashwords. Some are at FictionWise.com as well.
And good, we're going to have a ton of links in the podcast postings, and along with some of your book art and links to buying them. So thanks again for all of your time, Hank. It's been grand, and we will be chatting again. I just know it.
Great. I look forward to it.
Thanks, kiddo. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
What a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week on Wednesday for a fantastic Sex Wisdom podcast with two brilliant guests, and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better just call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell, gift-giving ideas. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. Say, would you like to become a sponsor for one or more of my sex advice podcasts? As you know, I plug a product or service at the beginning and end of each show, just like I'm doing now. Each podcast has its own posting on my site along with the name of the podcast sponsor and a banner for the product or service. The beauty part of this unique opportunity is that once a sponsor's ad is included in a particular podcast, that sponsor is embedded there forever. Your sponsorship also underscores your social conscience. Your marketing dollars will not only go to promote your product, but you will be doing so while helping to disseminate badly needed sex education and sexual enrichment messages. Simply put, you just can't get a better bang for your advertising buck. For further information, contact me through my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex, why, that's even better, over and out.